We're recording now.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Time to be serious.
if we could start with you each introducing yourselves and giving yourselves a title.
Okay, I'm Mary Holland, president. by title, what do you mean? You mean, is president okay?
Sure, but maybe something relative to your career or the show.
Oh, Mary Holland, Rachel.
And president.
And also president.
Tim Baltz, I played David on the show, and I also wrote and executive produced on the show, on Trink. We're talking about Trink today, right?
Apparently.
Good.
Well, if you can hear it in my voice, sometime between the time of recording with Tim and Mary and the time of recording today, something happened to my voice. I got a sore throat or something. Anyways, welcome to the CISO C Show. I'm Andrew Steven. Disclaimer, the show can be very edited. So if there's anything you mess up or like pronounce a name wrong and you don't want people to know, I'm not trying to get you or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I pronounced Robert De Niro's name wrong like 30 times.
But, or if it's a project or something that you're working on that you can't.
Oh, right.
About. Just you let can't me really. Know.
Yeah. But you do have a flashing sign that says "Gotcha," right?
Yes.
If you ever.
Yeah. And then big flashing sign for the podcast for the audio. So there's
the crowd gotcha. Loves it. Yeah. It's the sound of a jail cell closing.
Yeah.
I'm just such a big fan of Robert De Niro. Love Robert De Niro.
Callback.
Quick callback.
Callback.
Super fast callback.
So we're here recording at
Mary Holland, Rachel, callback.
The CISO offices and...
talking about Trink, callback.
Tim, you had a hard time getting here today.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those elevators where you have to have a little security thing to get to the right floor. And since I didn't have one, security has to press 9 on that elevator or whatever.
Right.
So I press 9. It lights up. I'm like, okay, good. And then for some reason, it opened at 5, the fifth floor.
But
and
you didn't know that.
I didn't know that because I thought I was alone in the elevator. So I press 9. It lights up. Doors open.
Aren't we all alone in the elevator? That is life.
Going up and down?
Yeah. Looking for the right floor. Sometimes getting off on the wrong floor.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah, shit. We can't do this with something that heavy in our heads.
Good night.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, so I just charged out of the elevators on the fifth floor.
Followed charged.
Your directions. Walked.
Head down.
Well, the offices are a little bit confusing because it's a multiple... NBC entities use this space. So it's like, it's kind of like you have like, I email a set of instructions with like turn right, turn left, turn right. Turn
left.
Right.
And so I walked around the entire fifth floor thinking at least half the people were CISO employees walking by with a look that was like, hey, it's me. Where's Andrew? And no one recognized me or paid any attention. And then I got back to the elevators.
Well, then
and I
you
saw
called
the
me.
Five.
You called me and be like, I'll just be waiting by the elevators.
Yeah.
So I outside there's these big posters for Shrink. Uh-huh. I was like, oh, this will be funny. So I grab one and walk to the elevator lobby, and I get it and I hold it up as if I'm like, look at me, I'm Tim. And then no one's in there, but I couldn't tell because he's not even in the elevator lobby.
Yeah, because then I'm waiting near the elevators on the fifth floor, looking around like, where the hell's Andrew? And then look at the number 5 next to the elevators, and I'm like, huh, how'd that happen?
Ugh.
Get back in the elevator, press 9. It won't light up because I don't have security clearance.
Oh, no.
Go back down, get security clearance, go back up to 9. At this point, Andrew's abandoned the poster bit.
Yeah. Well, I figured you were just lying because you were just running late, and this was all an elaborate excuse to just stall for time.
Not at all. We're here to talk about Trink. Callback.
We're talking about Trink. Callback.
How was your experience getting here?
Really smooth.
That's what they said out front. They're like, Mary's never been here before, and she found it first try.
Yeah, I didn't have any issues. It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. But wearing a red shirt for Happy International Women's Day.
Good for you. I'm...
You're in a pinkish shirt.
Yeah, and I've got a strawberry dum-dum in my hand.
I don't own any red clothing.
You don't? You should invest in color. It's a good investment.
I only have black shirts.
Cool. Johnny Cash.
I am actually wearing all black today.
This is the only red shirt that I have.
Was it Trailblazer?
Yeah, it's a Portland Trailblazer shirt that I got in Portland. It's cool as hell.
It is cool.
Yeah.
Pretty fly.
So, Shrink.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah. Come back.
This is going to make it hard to edit because now we have to include everything.
Well, yeah. And you should.
Or cut out. It's because it's all podcast gold.
Mm-hmm.
Podcast platinum.
But we can do a hard reset now with a question that you want about Shrink to go into it.
Is this a show about being really... Oh, we already made that joke once.
Yeah.
About being small, and I'm sure everyone has too.
Come back.
So if people don't know what Shrink is, what is it?
Okay, Shrink is about a show that follows the character David Tracy, who graduates from medical school, doesn't match with the university hospital. For people unfamiliar with that, basically, people go to medical school, they graduate, and then they basically have to reapply, in a sense, to medical school to get into a teaching hospital or a university hospital, which gives them a residency, which they do for a couple years, and then they become an official doctor, you know? So by a series of events, my character David doesn't match with the university hospital, so he doesn't get a residency, so he's over $500,000 in debt, and he's living back at home with his parents, who have co-signed on his loans. And he's trying to figure out what to do, so he basically defaults to clinical therapy. And in Illinois, you have to register 1,920 hours of supervised clinical therapy. So the pilot and the season of the show follows David getting a supervising therapist to sign off on his hours and then the beginning of this journey to log all these hours in his garage. And he can't charge people, so he's getting all these people off of like flyers and Craigslist who are going in for free therapy in his garage. And Mary plays one of the characters that comes mm-hmm. into the garage. We don't want to spoil too much, but
safe to say I'm in the garage.
Aren't we all in the garage?
We are in a way. Come back. Yeah, that was so well put.
I mean, I could go shorter too. I think I could.
You've probably done it a few times.
I've done it a few times. But the the story kind of explores David's relationship with the patients, with trying to get better at clinical therapy, which wasn't what he trained for. You know, it's his mm-hmm. plan B, and he's $500,000 in debt. His relationship with his supervising therapist, who, you know, is played by Sue Gillen, who's amazing, who's kind of the bedrock, the foundation for his journey. And then the relationship to his family, who's put under undue stress because of him moving home and the worry about this debt because his mom co-signed on the loans. And then the relationship with the patients that he's trying to help, you know, and he's not great at it. And that drives the comedy, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so do, characters like Mary's character, Rachel, and the other patients that come into the garage.
Yeah, I think what I'm curious is about, so the main character's name is David.
Yeah.
But since this is based off your real life, why did you choose to change your name?
I was so bad at medical stuff, we had to change it.
Is that a dumb joke?
Everything is autobiographical to you?
Yeah.
Oh, no, this is fiction, Andrew.
what's fiction?
Oh, boy.
We cast Mary because she's self-taped in a garage. We're like, well, we got to have her.
Yeah, I thought she was originally one of your early patients, but because it didn't work out,
yeah.
You chose a life of comedy instead.
No, we cast Mary because that character was really, it was a very nuanced character that had to walk specific lines and be great at improvising and bring like a sincerity and an emotion and a sense of humor to the part. She was our first choice.
Oh, thanks,
I say
Tim.
Our, I put your name in first.
Yeah. You mean the royal we?
Yeah. The royal we. No, but everyone on the team, as soon as I said that.
Yeah. What is that? British urine?
We? Piss. Go back.
Piss.
I want, that's a very a well said way to define Mary and actually both you. One of the things I enjoy when I see both of you perform for people who come, how do I want to say this? That's not mean to people.
Can't wait to hear what you're going to say.
Oh, boy. I think a lot of people.
You're going to be editing yourself out of this.
A lot of, oftentimes, people who come from an improv or sketch background
mm-hmm.
don't approach their performances the same way someone who has a trained actor background. And one of the things that's enjoyable and I think applaudable about both of your, when I see you both, excuse me, when I see each of you perform, is that it feels acted in the best sense of the word. Like it feels real. It feels like facial expression, stuff like that. You can get a laugh without having to say a line and stuff like that.
Oh,
and,
thank you. Nice. That's
and
nice.
So I think that's interesting.
Yeah. It was so fun working on this with Tim, who's such an ideal scene partner in every way. And there was such liberty, like Tim and the creative team really wanted to create this environment where there was just constant discovery in these sessions, in these therapy sessions, where we could go all these different places, to a darker place, a more vulnerable place, or a more silly place. But it all came from this really genuine, earnest relationship that he's trying to develop as a therapist to his patients. And I think that's one thing that's so appealing and so attractive about this character, and you really, really root for him, is because he genuinely, you can feel it. It just comes from him how much he sincerely wants to help people. And that's why it's so tragically funny when he falls short.
Which he does a lot.
Which he does a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun.
No, that's a great way to describe it. And that, the tone that is set for that improv comes in large part from Ted Tremper, who directed the original and directed 3 episodes of this season, who, especially when we're in the garage improvising, there are times, because the show was scripted, right? But CISO is also very open to the fact that we would be improvising in order to enhance that material and then find completely new material that felt organic, that helped give the show a very realistic feel, because it's a grounded comedy about real circumstances. And I like all types of comedy, but for this one, we needed to adhere to our approach to improv in order to maximize what we needed. And so Mary was ideal at all types of comedy, but this one in particular, and I have to, share the compliment that you gave as an ideal scene partner. I mean, it's so easy to play off of Mary because she can go in any direction, and luckily for us, we had time during production to go in a lot of different directions and kind of be vulnerable and be silly. And you see that across the episodes with Mary. There are times when it's a bit heavier between our characters. There are times when, I'm trying to pick her character up, and her character's trying to pick my character up emotionally. And then there are other times when, you just see a snippet of them kind of lost having a fun moment together, which helps you root for them, I think.
Yeah. I think that openness that CISO and Ted and Tim and everybody had in the process of that show, of like that openness to discovery, was just so vital, I think, to making this have the spontaneity and the realness that it does. It really feels so real.
And it echoes, I think, the best of what you hope to happen during therapy, is that you discover more about yourself.
Yes. Yeah. That's very true.
Great point. Because whenever you're improvising in front of a camera, it's different than on stage. On stage, you have the immediacy of the audience, that is giving you feedback, that is, in a weird subconscious way, kind of guiding the show, because you're improvising based off that feedback. You can't help but subconsciously make choices that further the laughs that you're getting from them. And you don't have that luxury when you're improvising on film. So there's an element where you don't know exactly what's going to work.
Right.
But if you stay in character, then it's all going to be usable in some way, or hopefully usable. And even if it's not, and it's not funny, kudos to the team and to CISO for allowing that time in the production schedule.
That is really, that shows such faith in the cast and really honors that, what you bring to the table as an actor, because that a lot of it, especially coming from improv backgrounds, I think Tim and I both any acting job we have, we bring that spirit to what we do. And so getting the opportunity, like, you know, being given that chance to find new things and build your character even more in that way is a real luxury.
And I actually have a question for Mary, because in when we were doing those sessions and when we were improvising, I don't know how, where your brain is at in terms of like, oh, we're getting good stuff, or mm-hmm. if you think about that at all, if that's just me because I'm an EP thinking, okay, we need to get this, we need to get this, hopefully we'll get this. Uh-oh, it looks like we didn't get this. That's always just going through my head, and I'm trying to quiet that while I'm performing so that it doesn't show up in the performance.
Yeah, that would be such a challenge.
But I don't know if for you, you have any pressure on yourself, or if hopefully we set you up to not think about that, or if that's something that personally you think about when you're performing. I don't know.
I mean, I think in that particular environment and in this story and as Rachel, I didn't so much have an eye to like, is this funny? Is this, you know, are we getting good laugh stuff in here? As much as I was really, I think the thing that occupied my mind the most was like, staying as present as possible, and also bringing the emotional life to it that I think she needed, and that, you know, I was constantly in my head of like, okay, is this good? Am I giving enough, or like, is it believable? And I definitely knew that we were like on some of our runs and stuff. I was like, I genuinely laughing at them. So I knew that we were having a good time. Yeah. And then there would be times like when I would get in my head in certain moments and think, as soon as I thought like I need to be more funny here, that really kind of started to like unravel other things in my brain. And so I think I learned in that moment of like, okay, I just need to not be thinking about that and just, you know, trust that Tim and Ted and, you know, everybody's got their eye on that.
Yeah.
Patrick, and will tell me.
Patrick Daly, our other creative EP, and Chuck Martin, our showrunner, and one of the EPs, you know, they were all part of the team that is watching that for that. You know, 'cause there are times that just require more emotional sincerity and commitment and presence than others. But I never saw that process going through your head. I never saw you doubting that or anything. What was great was that, you know, because it was heavily scripted, I mean, when you're improvising, a lot of times the first thing to go is the emotional honesty, mm-hmm. only because, and it happens to everybody, it happens to me, only because you're thinking verbally of what will be funny.
Yeah.
Right.
And so you're part of your brain that usually that takes the percentage that is committed to emotional honesty kind of gets relegated or maybe just disappears because you're like, all right, I'm thinking of the funny thing. I want to hit the funny thing. And you're conscious of like the cameras and the movement and hitting your spot and your lighting being right.
Yeah.
So to know that Mary was always bringing that 100% of the time mm-hmm. was such a relief. You know,
Well, it reminds me of there's a story about Judd Apatow. I forget which. I think it was one of his films or that he was producing or something. He somehow had some creative input and they pulled a scene mm-hmm. that got huge laughs when they played it for test audiences and replaced it with another scene that just it could be perceived as a filler scene. And when they asked him, like, why did you do that? Like, that got huge laughs. Like, this scene isn't funny. And he goes, that scene was really funny that we took out, but it didn't have any of the heart. And mm-hmm. sometimes in order for a bigger payoff later or for the project as a whole, like, you have to remember to put in the emotion and put in the heart to make it the payoff worthwhile.
Yeah. And you have to, especially if you're doing, you know, all the episodes kind of follow, they build a story to the eighth episode, you know, and that's important. And so pacing between laughs and taking the emotional context of all these characters, taking it into account, we wanted to always make sure that the, you know, if we were sacrificing a laugh here, it was helping the emotional arc of this character or this relationship dynamic. Something that would happen at Second City when we were, because I wrote three shows there, and you take 3 months to write a show, and then sometimes, you know, you run the show for like 10 or 11 months straight. You're running the same material. So you intimately get to know every single joke in the show and what helps it, what hurts it. You know, it could be like someone sneezed during this one moment, so the joke is ruined. Mm. But if you're ranking jokes on how they work from 1 to 10, like what kind of laugh is this? This laugh is a 6, but it's there because this laugh over here is a 10. But if that 6 laugh suddenly becomes a 10 laugh, the 10 laugh that you have later gets diminished. And then you have to honestly look at it as performers, as comedians, you know, and say, which laugh is more important?
Right.
And if we're being greedy with the 6 laugh and it's hurting this 10 laugh, but the 10 laugh is more important to the show, to the scene, to these characters, whatever it is, you got to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And you got to, you know, not be greedy about that 6 laugh in order for that 10 laugh to be preserved.
Yeah, it really is an orchestration. It's like such a, everything has to work in such harmony and has to flow in such a way that where it is like all the jokes are hitting the way you want them to, and those moments are like resting those jokes, the emotional moments. Yeah, it's very, it's really quite beautiful when you think about it.
I love, too, just the mutual admiration that's going back and forth here.
Oh, it's so easy to play with Mary. I mean, I honestly couldn't have imagined that part going with anyone else, you know. Mm-hmm. And we were lucky that our casting process went really well with Wendy O'Brien here in L.A. and then with PR Casting in Chicago.
Speaking of that a little bit, before we watch the first episode, you kind of referenced it earlier, but there was an original pilot that was that 6 years ago?
It was. We took it. So we started the web series in fall 2011 in Chicago. We did like 11 webisodes. Uh-huh. And then Ted had the idea to turn that into a pilot to take to New York Television Festival. So we filmed some transitional stuff with the supervising therapist and with Mick Napier's character. And then he submitted that June 2012, and then the festival was mm-hmm. October 2012.
So in some ways you were able to recast or change it. I mean, some of the stories are different and stuff like that. But can you just talk maybe a little bit about the process of going from web series to a pilot to now?
Yeah, I mean, web series to pilot was pretty, you know, Ted had the idea for the transitional scenes that we would shoot. We, you know, we put our heads together to cast who we wanted. That included Sue Gillen, who plays the supervising therapist, who's also in this one. Claudia Wallace, who plays, the receptionist at the therapist's office, who also reprises her role. And Mick Napier, who plays Trevor, one of the patients, who also reprises his role. And so that transition from web series to pilot was pretty seamless and great. And, you know, Ted edited that. We spent $211 on the web series and pilot, all told.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then...
And all that went towards snacks, right?
Basically. and then we took that to New York Television Festival, won Best Comedy and Critics Award. And then Gene Demanian Productions, even before that happened, had been tipped off to it because they knew TJ and Dave and TJ Jagodowski was in it. And I think our agents sent it to them. And so they wanted to develop it with us before it went to the festival, which was great. And so we signed with them before that. And then it did well at the festival. And it was like we had some wind behind our sails. Then we pitched it May 2013, ended up selling it to Pivot, which was a TV station owned by Participant Media, which shut down 4 or 5 months ago, maybe. They owned it for 2.5 years. We got really close to making it a couple times. Their CEO left. Their head of programming left. Whenever that happened, we'd be bumped back down to zero. They really wanted to make it, and they kept it instead of clearing house like people like networks usually do when they have management changes. They kept it, and then finally, one more setback happened, and we asked for them to give it back to us, and they very gracefully gave it back to us. And then a couple months later, we sold it to CISO. So that was the just how it changed hands. And that's why, you know, it was ready to be made in 2013 and it wasn't.
Yeah, it's got to be both frustrating and flattering, the fact that they wanted to hold on to it because they liked it, but also frustrating that it kept on getting postponed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I moved here in January 2014 because of that. It's not that I wouldn't have moved here, but honestly, I never thought of living in LA, ever. I thought Chicago would be the only place. You kind of reached the end of the road in Chicago comedically, I think.
Yeah, we talked about that last night.
Yeah, and now it's changing a lot. Yeah, and I won't get into that, but for the better, I think. But that was how it progressed in terms of how close it was to getting made. But then once you actually get the order and you start writing, we were lucky that the original pilot served as kind of the character and season arc for the entire season that we ended up writing. So we knew where it was starting and we knew where it was ending.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's great.
And then we took 2 weeks in the writer's room, which was Chuck Martin, our showrunner, Emily Wilson, one of the writers, Ted and I, one of the writers, Stephen Lancelotti, who was our writer's assistant, who also ended up writing, especially was instrumental in helping us when we got to Chicago. But that we kind of spent 2 weeks writing outlines for all the episodes, and then CISO came in and looked at it, and we kind of walked him through it, and they liked it, and they were awesome creatively to work with. You know, they understood the tone right away, and so we all helped each other stay on tone so that there weren't any false notes. And I think that we came through overcoming all the obstacles and not having any false notes and staying on tone the whole time.
Yeah, there was such... I noticed that every single time I went in to work there. There was such dedication to having it be so genuine, and the integrity of everybody on that team that was overlooking the creative aspects. That was so clear. The complete dedication to making it as earnest and real as possible.
And Abominable was our production company, and they, like, a shout out to them for how great they were at protecting that too. Mm-hmm. Not like people were attacking it, you know. But it's different every single...
Yeah, you'd think something named Abominable would be the attack.
But every single show has a different tone, you know, and you kind of, everyone has to be on board to protect that tone in a certain way, or to experiment,
yes,
and push the boundaries of that tone. And this one had a specific one that we felt was unique to it, just given the style of improv and the way that we were using it. And everyone was really supportive of doing that. And we cast the people that we knew would support that and bring it out, whether they were conscious of that tone or not. Mm. And we got really lucky there too.
We don't have to include this if this is too insider.
I already hate it. I already
political.
Hate it. So political.
I'm just curious. How much was Evan involved in the pivot and then the CISO?
Evan used to be a pivot, right? Yeah. And he loved it. And Kelsey Balance used to be a pivot.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Were they the first people that brought it over?
To CISO?
No, to pivot.
To pivot. I think Evan was already there. Maybe Evan came on board
and
was okay with it. Both of them were champions of it, you know. Kelsey wasn't there at first. So when the first scripted programming change happened and we were worried, Kelsey came in. We had another meeting with Pivot, and she was like, I love this idea. I love it, you know. And she grew up in Evanston, I believe, or, you know, in the Chicagoland area. So
yeah,
she really believed in Chicago as a character in the story.
It really is. There's such a vibe there. I think location is so important, and Chicago is a huge character in this show, I think.
Yeah, because it has a different demographic and feel, and the problems are unique to it, like they are to any place. And trying to capture that, we felt was important, and then we got to shoot there, which obviously helps create that part of the narrative too. So, cool. No, Evan was great. Kelsey was great. Whole CISO team, you know?
Yeah. I was just curious if there was a... You know, like if Evan was like, we wanted to make this a pivot, it didn't work. And then, you know, so we got chance number two to do it at a new network.
Yeah. I mean, they believed in it. Without them, it doesn't get made. And without them, it doesn't get made in the way that it's made too, you know, with them understanding the tone and vision and saying like, we'll block this off for you to have the time to improvise. And
I'm fighting for that. That's so huge.
It was chill.
Okay, so now is the part of the show where we're going to do a little audio commentary. So if you need to get logged into CISO or head over to YouTube, get ready because we're about to start.
So log into CISO or go to YouTube, and we're about to hit play.
Oh boy, you better join us.
Gotta sync this up.
Sync it up. Do you count down to help them sync
up? We can count down. Do you want to count down together?
Yeah.
Three, two, one. And
splay.
Splay. Okay, there we go. CISO. I love that. Mm-hmm. CISO Originals.
Is that a working tape player?
It is, yeah. That's what we did the original on.
Pursuant to requirements set out by Illinois statute.
And the original Ted had a tape recorder.
Yeah.
I am required to inform you that I am not a licensed psychologist, psychiatrist, or a registered therapist.
Is this the actual text?
Yes.
Google what it is?
Yeah, so that was the actual text. That was the only thing that wasn't improvised in the original, was that text. To the original, you know, we didn't have time to script it. We just started as an improvised web series.
Right.
There's Mary.
Hey, y'all.
No, there's no such thing as half doctor. You're either a doctor.
Was that your top?
No, that was not.
Really?
That was a Chicago thrift store find.
You went with them, right?
Yes, I went with the costume designer, and we did a little thrifting to make Rachel's look.
You had a vision of what it should be?
We had a vision of, like, cool, but not too cool. Kind of a, there's a specific, like, Chicago girl street style that feels like a very specific vibe.
Yeah, they nailed it, too. You know, it's not like, I mean, you have better than thrift store style, but you have thrift store budget, and it's not like LA where... If you're going to thrift stores, you might as well be going to a regular store and getting brand new clothes for the
brand
prices.
New clothes and brand new clothes prices.
Yeah.
How I'm actually curious about the sort of conceit of the show. Like, again, with the pursuant to the, did you how hard was it to confirm and make sure like everything was actual? Like if you went to med school and this happened and all sort of like that.
Ted, it's loosely based on a friend of Ted's who graduated from medical school and didn't get a residency and then moved back in with his parents but didn't tell anybody. Now he's fine. He's like a pathologist or something like that. So he has enough doctor friends that he was covering all the medical school bases. And then, you know, we had a mutual friends in therapy. That we could kind of cross-reference all the therapy stuff. But we did the appropriate research so that all the technical stuff about, like, the hours that you have to fulfill, supervising therapists, like, all that's... We covered all our bases.
And if it's wrong, they can find you on Twitter and tweet.
Yeah, looking forward to the Reddit threads of, like, actually... This is Claudia Wallace. She was in the original. She's hilarious.
She's great. I love the relationship between you two.
Yes, there's such hostility towards you right up at the top.
I know.
It's so funny.
She was my level E improv teacher when I was in college at Second City.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And then she was on stage there in the mid-2000s. And this is Sue Gillen. She was on Second City alum from the late 90s, early 2000s. Boom Chicago with like Seth Meyers and them. She's amazing.
She's great too. Both those two casting. I mean, all the casting, but like you mentioned before, just everyone is their character.
Yeah. People thought that she was a real therapist in the original. They're like, cool. Great job. So who is that real therapist that you guys have?
Yeah, she definitely has the therapist thing down.
Which is funny because in real life, she's like one of the hippest, silliest people. Her sense of humor's all over the place, and she can do whatever she wants. And here she is playing the straight man to my dumbass.
What can I do for you today?
Oh, okay.
Okay. And they, they really dress me like a.
I want to do what you're doing.
I don't know. How would you?
It's like idiot, stupid, ugly.
Whoa. I was gonna say.
Yeah, that's in the breakdown of my character. Idiot, stupid, ugly.
No.
You forgot, no good, disrespectful. Shut up, bitch.
I meant
fix
to say,
me a turkey pot pie.
Sexy,
breakfast
attractive.
There you buff. Go. I would say it's sort of a preppy look, but not over the top preppy.
I like that I keep getting emails and texts on my laptop during this.
Pretty exciting. We get to see what's going on.
I know.
We did have similar wardrobe discussions about my character.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Mary. Because he's, you know, he's not white collar. Like, he comes from a blue collar family. And that's a big part of the character is, and this happens in the Midwest all the time, you know. I think in America all the time. If you come from nothing or relatively nothing, and you're trying to move up in classes. Like, everyone loves a huge success story. But man, on the ladder going up, people are trying to knock you down all the time. Who do you think you are for trying to, like, go up a class? And it's not that my character was trying to do that, but if you become a doctor, you do, that is part of our society, is that you get an elevated, you go up a notch in class, kind of, because you're doing a service and you're making more money and you're higher profile and, like, the responsibility and the pressure that comes with it. But he's not, you know, he's trying to dress the part without.
Yes. And you can see that. You can see the effort to dress the part there.
But then you look at his shoes and you're like, this dude ain't, he's not white collar. Oh, here's Brendan Jennings. That's Rashawn Scott. She's currently on Second City Main Stage. She's so hilarious. And Brendan and I toured together and did two ETC shows together. So he's a guy that, I don't know, he's one of the best improvisers alive.
Yeah.
Random weird question. Is this an actual garage or is this a set piece?
Yeah, actual garage.
Actual garage.
Same with your supervising therapist's office. Is that a set piece or a...
It's downtown Chicago, so it's actually, you know, like what you're seeing out the windows is real, but we had to dress it. Yeah. It wasn't a therapist's office.
Dress it up.
This is Thomas Kelly. He's in a group called Sand in Chicago, which is a great improv group. We just missed John Lutz, who is a IO, Second City Touring Company alum.
30 Rock.
30 Rock.
This happened this morning?
Yeah.
You need to call someone to make sure he's okay.
I can call the apartment.
Okay, yeah. Tammy Sager.
Oh, she's so great.
Yeah, I think she did a show with Sue Gillen. They're of the same era. She's so good in Don't Think Twice.
Yes, oh, she is. I love her in that.
I'm $500,000 in debt.
Damn!
That's outrageous. Oh, shit. Okay, sorry. Keep going.
Yeah, Mary, what did you think when you first went in the garage? Were you like, this is, to us it was great, because it was attached to the house that we used for the family, too. So it was all one set piece.
So it was actual, the place, too. Yeah.
It really, I mean, I remember going in there for that first session and sitting down there, and I had the exact same feelings I'm sure any of these people would if they really went to a therapy session. And it was in a garage where there's a little bit of trepidation, but you're also intrigued. And there's something about the rawness of that space that makes you want to be more vulnerable, which is interesting. That was my feeling about it initially. And then I came to love it so much.
I'm glad you had a little trepidation. It's funny, we were watching some clips of, like, our first... Oh, yeah, we were going looking for, like, deleted scenes and footage and stuff like that yesterday, actually, at Abominable. And we were going through our stuff, you know, to see, like, what didn't make the episodes. And it was before it was the improv before we shot the end of episode one, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to give away any spoilers.
We'll be able to talk about it. Yes.
But... you can tell that we're, like, settling into it, you know?
Yeah.
And it was all great stuff. It just, like, didn't fit in the pilot.
Yeah.
And then I think there was some stuff that was shot wardrobe-wise specifically for the pilot, so we couldn't use it.
Right.
And it's interesting to see us kind of, like, feeling... The characters feeling each other out.
Yes.
Settling in.
Yes.
But that fits perfectly with... Or is that what you were saying?
It did fit perfectly, but it was interesting, you know...
At the beginning of the process versus at the end, yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Here's Kyle Moore. He plays Barry, my stepbrother.
The difference between you two is staggering.
Oh, yeah.
Cutting tanning oil?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to make bank, son. Isn't that illegal?
Just the idea of someone cutting tanning oil cracked us up so much. Such a dumb idea. That fits his character. Yeah.
Even this shot where you're up a little bit, you've got your blazer on, you're holding a folder, he's down there below, you know.
Sweat,
like, yeah, throwing tanning bottles around.
Okay, ballers, but none of the others.
Did you go back and forth with different show ideas?
We listed all the HBO. Oh, this is...
What's a yogurt movie?
This was improvised.
Look up yogurt movie. I know what a yogurt movie is.
Yeah, what's your favorite yogurt movie?
Just the idea that, like, if he gets something wrong, he would double down on it,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy that, like, can't admit that he's wrong, but he's wrong so frequently.
Yeah.
And he did a great job. You know, we had a handful of things about that character that he embraced and was great at improvising in character with.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Megan Fay, who's awesome. She had a recurring part on Transparent last season or season before. She's a Second City alum from the early 80s. I was on stage with, like, Jim Belushi and George Wendt, maybe. But she is actually from my hometown of Joliet, Illinois. And I grew up talking, like, hearing about her all the time.
Wow.
And then didn't meet her until this, until she was after she was cast.
That's crazy.
She showed up, and I was like, hi, I'm from Joliet. And she's like, oh, my God, right, your last name. And this is TJ Jagodowski.
No, I don't hate him.
Bill Cochran.
I hate the sounds that come out.
Mary Grill.
The words, you mean what he says?
No, like everything. Like swallowing, chewing, breathing. Do you hear him right now?
I honestly don't hear him breathing. See? It's her. She's got sonar. She's like a bat.
Bill's in Cook County Social Club, the great improv group.
Oh, yeah.
But I think all the other members live in L.A. now, and he lives in Chicago.
Right.
I like movie soundtracks.
You do?
Yeah. I like Armageddon.
This is for real, right?
Mm-hmm. This is for real. This was quite an ordeal for me to be able to name albums or songs from any band. I'm just not great about music knowledge, but I really do like movie soundtracks, and Armageddon is a dear love of mine.
These are some great impersonations here as well.
Yeah, Owen Wilson impression.
Tim.
I got
Wilson.
My agents talked me out of doing an Owen Wilson impression for my SNL audition, and they were like, nah, it's just like everyone does it. I'm like, what? And I went and looked, and I was like, I think no one's ever done like a verbal Owen Wilson impression on SNL. And I kept it out. And I kind of always was like kind of pissed about it. We found a way to sneak it in. And it was like once you mentioned Armageddon, I was like, oh, well, this is all I remember that from that is Owen Wilson. I'm a huge Owen Wilson fan. But he's.
Well, now with Melissa Villa Senior does a great Owen Wilson on SNL.
She does?
Yeah.
I got to see that. That's incredible.
Don't want to close my eyes.
Yeah. Oop, I dropped a tape recorder.
David, how many people are you seeing?
Oop.
Well, at least 20, but I've lost track. My mom's French, and so sometimes she doesn't pluralize things, you know? She doesn't pluralize oops.
Well, what is the singular of an oops? Wouldn't it be oop? Like, you've just, like, yeah. I left my keys upstairs.
Yeah.
That was just an oop.
Yeah, oop.
Just one.
She doesn't pluralize months either, because, you know, French people have hard time with TH sounds. They don't have TH sounds in French.
How do you pluralize a month? Normally.
Months.
Months.
Oh.
But she'll be like, well,
I was thinking, like, January's. I was like, when do you...
No.
When do you...
Well, you just did it, January's. But she... I love my January's.
Yeah. That's what I was like, what scenario would take place where you need to pluralize months specifically?
No, but she'll be like, you know, oh, that happened 6 months ago.
Oh, that's so charming.
Here's Sue again. Look at that brooch or the necklace or whatever.
Yeah.
They nailed her outfit.
Yeah, I have that same one.
Statement.
You have that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's nice. What is that?
It's very Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Callback.
Callback. I mostly wear grays and blues in real life, so I like this outfit.
Yeah.
You just mentioned that it's a gray area, too. Your character.
Oh. Come back. This is Hans Holson. One of the funniest people alive.
His character is so amazing.
Yeah.
There was so many unexpected things with his character.
This scene right here is basically a verbatim transcript from what we improvised in 2011.
Yes.
Okay, you've got an hour.
You never know where Hans's brain is going.
No, yeah, and even like the looks he gives you as this character is so funny. You don't know what's happening behind his eyes.
Yeah. I toured with Hans for a year, and I was young. I was like 25 when I toured, and he's a few years older than me, and he's just like a great mentor. And he and Mike O'Brien are two of the guys that I always looked up to when I was coming up, and they were the best at writing, saying yes to their own voices, you know, not editing their own ideas. So a lot of times you're writing, you go further along in an idea, and you kind of stop, and you're like, no, this doesn't work, or, you know, I really want it. You want it to be perfect the whole way, and so you edit yourself, and you get in your own way, and those two guys are the best at just, like, coming up with an idea where you're like, where did that come from? And then building it out, never judging it.
Right.
I learned a ton from them.
Okay, so money...
Natural, point of silence. Curious. So we saw a little bit ago when you were taking notes, your character, that they were handwritten on the screen.
Yeah.
You called it the Harry Potter effect.
Yeah. Why did we do that?
I don't know.
So long ago.
That's what I was wondering. That was my question.
From some...
Do they do that in one of the movies?
Oh, right. It's from Harry Potter 2. From the second Harry Potter movie, Chamber of Secrets. Mm-hmm. From the, you know, when he writes in that journal and it disappears.
Oh, that's right. Because someone responds to it.
Yeah.
That's right.
I see. It didn't actually come up as a lower third.
It was actually a Horcrux.
Yes.
Yeah.
That journal.
So is this canon to the Harry Potter universe?
Yeah. Yeah. This takes place in
modern day, though.
Modern day universe. London. Yeah, we say Chicago, but really it's London.
But is that actually your handwriting?
Yeah, Abominable did that. They had me write down stuff, and then they traced it.
That's cool.
This is Mary Sohn. I did everything at Second City with Mary. I toured for 2.5 years, and I did all 3 shows with her. She's a badass.
A light!
Oh my God!
She comes into a room full of light. I've been hit with a hammer and I fell.
But you've been very clear that it's a great way to describe.
It is how I sleep. I'm a stomach sleeper. And I don't like to be touched.
I don't like to be touched either, actually.
I can't fall asleep if we're like going really deep into our own personalities. I can't fall asleep if I'm cuddling.
I can't either. I love cuddling when I'm awake, though. But when I'm asleep, I'm like, I have to be completely.
My girlfriend would just, like, as soon as she starts cuddling, she falls asleep.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's very cute.
That's
and, like,
either...
likes to slide underneath.
It's either a superpower or a super flaw.
She can sleep anywhere.
The super flaws. Can I pitch that? I'm going to pitch that.
Yes. We're at CISO. Go pitch it.
Super flaws. What do you guys think? It's about everyone's imperfections. These stupid idiots and their problems.
Do you, like, try to fix them or...
No, you just point.
You just show them.
Yeah. It's just a big finger that's, like, off screen that points at people. And then you're like, look at this idiot. And
so, like, other comedian friends or just people on the street or...
Everyone's fair game, dude.
Is it, like, a hidden camera thing or...
Not for long, because I want to see the shame on people's face when we expose their super flaws. Is this a good idea or a bad idea for a show?
Great idea.
I think you already sold it.
That's the right one, too. This is something that differs from the original, too.
I am not comfortable being part of this.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
What?
Defug? Right, Mary? That's something that we joked about all the time that we were trying to get in, and we never did. Defug?
Tim saying Defug and looking so perplexed. Ugh, it was so funny.
I can do this. I wanted to get it. You remember I was like, I know where to get it in.
Yeah.
And it was in episode 8, and it didn't when we were at your place. And I forgot. So mad at myself.
Yeah. Oh, it would have been perfect there. Season 2. Yeah, throw Defug in.
So this is David's just been rejected by Sue, his supervising therapist. Look at Chicago. Jeez. Oh,
it's amazing how they make L.A. look like Chicago.
How they make London look like Chicago.
Oh, yeah. That would have been amazing. Or Chicago look like London. This is why you're the professional improvisers and actors, and I'm the podcast host.
He Here's Megan. This is the inside of the house, which you saw earlier. The kitchen.
Oh, that's where you are.
Yeah, and we're at the kitchen table. And I'm still wearing that outfit, grays and blues. Nice. She's in red. What's that?
My buttons keep on clicking on the table. I don't know if the mic's picking that up or not.
Oh, this part was great. She's a fantastic improviser and like a classically well-renowned trained actress.
Yeah.
Director.
No, it really is great how much, I mean, you can have the ridiculous and the goofy or whatever you want to call it, but you can have the serious and the heart and the real moments. And it is a nuanced approach. I think we said that earlier. And that tone is, you know, more unique to your show than a lot of other things out there. And I really appreciate that, one, you were able to do it, and then, two, that you accomplished it.
And, you know, I mean, we take our lead from a lot of great comedies. Our director of photography is Chris Teague, who did Obvious Child, which I think is one of the best comedies of the last 5 years. And that was... There are a lot of things, you know, that were inspirations to us. Is Joel Murray
another inspiration?
He's great, man.
He is great.
Their chemistry is so great too.
Joel Murray, the reason he started at Second City was because he saw Megan Fay on stage.
Really?
Had a huge crush on her when he was like 15.
How cute is that? Yeah. That's so cute. Maybe I'll just join up
with Barry. Yeah, even like, you know, going back to the nuance thing, like his character and the way he's able to portray sort of the tough love, hard, you know, blue collar working man, but yeah, then also still has lots of heart and is, you know, has everyone's best intentions involved too. It's great.
Yeah, there's a type of Midwestern man, you know, that's like, you know, child of, that's a baby boomer or you know, in their late 40s to advanced age, that got so much tough love from people that were like pre-war mm-hmm. parents, you mm-hmm. know, and that were like, well, I'm not going to treat my child like that. But at the same time, you're not getting any free rides.
Yeah.
You know, it is all about tough love. But at the same time, they're like, come on, this isn't tough love. You don't right. know what tough love is.
Right, right, right. And there's a stoicism too, I think, with where, you know, and that is that vibe of like, he doesn't, his emotions aren't on full display all the time, but he feels them a lot and you know, maybe he has trouble expressing them. Mm-hmm.
yeah. This is Rebecca Sohn. She's great. Second City and Annoyance Theater alum. What
do
you mean?
Do you know how many therapists I've seen in Chicago? 24.
It's the tipping shit. Point.
I mean, holy shit.
No, it's a lot.
You know, David's not great at this, and obviously Sue, his supervising therapist, has big problems with his approach and his methods, but it is to what Mary said earlier. He does care. He wants to help. This is how he wants to make money, to live, you know? That's the profession that he wants, is something in
helping people.
Yeah. TJ Jagodowsk. Yeah. Improv Jesus. Of
course. Yeah. In the
spirit of honesty. For real. That's what they call him.
Is it weird to say I didn't think you'd be any good at this?
How much of you is in David?
I was raised Catholic and I do have like a strong sense of fairness and justice, I think. So wanting to help, you know, wanting things to be right is a big, I bring that to him a lot. But
really, you just hate people.
No, I do. I love people. I'm probably. I don't know. I never thought about that. I thought about it, but you know, I'm not going to talk about it now.
And I don't really think you hate people either.
No,
definitely. No laugh, and you responded to it sincerely, and I felt like such a.
Here's one of my favorite Easter eggs. Asshole. This is something that the art department, which was awesome, did. Just look at this. Ron Paul is my president sticker. That, to me, we told Kyle that, you know, because this is the first couple days of filming, and we're like, just know this is part of your MO. And he's like, oh yeah, man.
Informed his character.
Love the look that guy gave me. We had a line there that we cut. I don't even think I can sit
down right now. Do you remember what it was?
I think it was like, actually, it'll be more than a minute or something. It didn't work in the edit.
You
can even say that I'm bad at this, or that I defaulted to it, or that this entire thing is a terrible idea. But you can't say that I don't care about my patients. I spent $40 I don't have on an app to show a bulimic patient what happens to the body when it goes into a starvation state.
There's a real app.
Wow. Yeah.
Ted. So I spent another Ted brought that about the app line to the table.
Oh, so man.
Talk through it together. I'm making real progress with some of these people. I've got a couple that hate
you. It's hard. I don't want to talk over it. I just want to watch it.
Me too.
I like that jacket. In like 2009, I bought a jacket that was kind of like that.
Mm, yeah, that's a good jacket.
That's not the real the jacket I'm talking about, though.
Okay.
David. I don't have to sit there.
I gotta say, that to us was like a great way to talk about the fact that it's been on cassette, and that's the first time we really point it out, you know? And at the premiere, which was Monday, that line slayed. and like Ted and Patrick and I are looking at each other like, holy crap. I knew it was funny, but we didn't write it like a laugh line, you know? We wrote it just as like a...
acknowledging the fact that it's a cassette.
Yeah, and it kind of...
people love anachronisms.
And it kind of was a way to get David onto the couch for this right here. And Sue's finally saying yes, and she's laying out her terms that he has to abide by.
Even for an instant that one of your patients is a danger to himself or anyone else, you have to tell me immediately so we can take the appropriate steps.
We'll trade phone numbers. You'll be the first to know.
And finally, I'm afraid you've crossed enough.
He's so excited.
I need to say this. Under no circumstances are you to engage in any physical relations with a patient.
Yeah, yes, of course, yes.
Foreshadowing.
Immediate foreshadowing. Here goes the tape recorder. Yes, I thought they edited really well. Uh-oh. Look at Mary's pinky darting under my hand. So cute.
Yeah.
Was that a written line? It's okay.
Yeah, that was from the pilot, right?
Yeah. Josh Mosher, our composer.
Great music, too. Good choice of stylistically.
Yeah. He did the original, and then he went on to work on Baskets. And
so these rules start now, right?
There you go.
Yes.
Directed by Graham Linehan, the great Graham Linehan.
Teleplay.
Teleplays.
Teleplays.
Now, I mean, we can say what we see. Executive
Producer why teleplay?
Executive Producer Chuck Meyer.
Versus...
Executive Producer Jonathan Stern. Producer Kobe Rowe.
Kobe Rowe.
Star Jim Mouse. Sue Gillen. Mary Holland.
Yeah.
Teleplay, I mean, it's WGA. I think it's kind of standard for WGA. I'm new to WGA, but I think it's standard for a pilot to do that.
Versus,
I don't know.
Written by?
Yeah.
I think there's
I'm trying to remember. There's
a written by credit on it, too. And now, for people that are watching Illinois Film Office, what's up? Gene Demania Productions, Sarcasm Inc., and Abominable. Yeah.
CISO.
And for people that are watching the subsequent episodes that are listening to this, there's a tag after the credits on most episodes. So look forward to that.
So that was episode one of Shrink.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching with us.
Thanks for setting that up, man.
Yes, thank you. You should check your email.
If people want to find you online, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at mholland85 or on Instagram at maryhollandays.
And you perform?
Yes, and I perform at UCB in various shows. JV, Wild Horses, The Show Is Not Funny, AsCat, Playhouse Masterpieces. I just get up
you're
in there.
On Blunt Talk.
On Blunt Talk.
You're on Veep. You have a new project coming out. That's pretty cool.
Very exciting.
So just turn on your TV and you'll probably see Mary somewhere.
Yeah.
And Tim, how about you?
On Twitter, at Tim_Baltz. And on Instagram, at AlonzoMorning33.
The best Instagram. <I know. laughs>
Every time I get a like, I'm like, who's? Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. You get so excited.
He's my favorite basketball player and a great human being, I think. And I picked it when I thought Instagram wouldn't stick around and I didn't want anyone to see my pictures.
Yes.
And that backfired.
And now you've just doubled down.
Yeah.
Pot committed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I usually play the Armando show at the iOS Theater. I jump in at UCB shows. But I've been away from the game for like 9 months working on this. So looking forward to...
Yeah, you got Shrink. You got Bajillion on CISO.
On CISO. Check that out. Seasons 1 and 2 are up. And season 3 for Bajillion comes out June 1st.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Any last things that people should know, just in general?
Look, be yourself.
Be aggressive? I don't know.
Yeah, be aggressive. Be aggressive. That's it.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, Andrew.
Call back.
Get back.
That's our show this week. Thanks so much for listening. And special thanks to Tim Baltz and Mary Holland for doing this episode. Hope you have a good week. See you next Monday. Bye.